Welcome to Crew Call, the Below the Line podcast by, for, and about the crew. Today we're speaking with an experienced property master, Jim Falkenstein. Hello, Jim.
It's your property, yes, exactly.
Yes, for all our listeners, if you didn't know what props stood for, props is property. So you are a...
property master.
That is an awesome title.
It's an awesome title. Not a lot of people get to use master without getting, you know, hate mail. But I'm a master of things, not people. So I think it's still cool. I'm okay with it.
I think it's cool.
Not vilified. Yeah. Now, it's also a little known fact. I didn't know this until like the 10th year of being a prop master. Mm-hmm. Was that I'm in charge of action props.
Ooh.
Now, action props are totally different, apparently. Action props, yeah, things that move around.
Oh.
I was told that. I'm like, oh, action props. That sounds cool. Because the other stuff is set dressing, really.
Yes, because it just sits there.
Yeah, if you have a chess game set up, right?
Uh-huh.
If it's just dressed in the back, you know, and kind of a bunch of pieces, well, that looks like a prop, right? Because people probably play chess.
Right.
Well, if nobody plays that, it just sits there, it's not an action. So it's just a set dressing piece.
Oh, but if they're using it, it's an action prop?
Yes. And if they're walking around, they go, you know what? Let's play chess. There's that chess set over there. I'm like, they'll go, what's wrong with this? I go, I don't know. It's not my chess set. It's set dresser brought chess set in. They go, well, they're going to play chess. I'm like, oh, here we go. It's all mine now. So then I take that, and then I got to make sure it works. And they go, you know what? I want the bishops to be taller, and I want the, can we get like a, oh, marble. Marble would be good. And then all of a sudden it's mine, and I got to go get a bunch of stuff. They play chess. So it can evolve into an action prop. So then it becomes mine. Or sometimes I'll get stuff, and it just sits there and nothing happens to it. It's still a prop because I brought it. But
I think you have a very fun job because you get to be so incredibly creative.
You think so, right?
Okay, so let's start about this. So is it they tell you what to do or they give you the props or do you go and find them or how does that all work?
It depends. Every show is a little different. It depends on the personality of your director and the personality of your actors and the personality of your big showrunner, writer, producer person.
Mm-hmm.
So you get the script and I go through the script and I go, well, I'll get this stuff and that stuff. That's pretty simple. I'll get that and that. And then I go like, okay, there's these three things I could, you know, if they ask for, you know, she pulls out a gun and threatens them. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, well, does she pull out a shotgun? Does she have like a little girl gun? Does she have like a Glock? She's a former cop. You know, these can be like a bunch of different things.
Mm-hmm.
So I bring like all these options to like the writer, usually a director first and go, hey, she pulls out a gun, quote, what do you think it should be? He says, oh no, the director goes, oh, it's got to be pearl handle and, you know, small, you know, like she pulls out of her boot. I'm like, okay, I'll get one of those. And then the writer comes by and goes, you know what it should be? It should be big, like a 357 mag. I'm like, yeah, Clint Eastwood's got. I'm like, oh. Well, that's different than what the director goes. Oh, don't listen to the director. He's an idiot. Right. And then I'm walking to my room, and then the actor will go, hey, in the script, I pull out a gun. I have a gun at home, and I'm going to bring it in because it's really cool. And I got to go, whoa.
You're like, no.
No. Let's not get a real gun because, you'll kill people. So we're not going to do that. Well, can you get one exactly like my gun at home? Yeah, I got it from my grandfather, and it's got, it's an old Western gun. I'm like, oh, here we go. So you end up getting three different things. And then you get what you think would be cool instead of all their dumb ideas, and you keep that in the back. And so while the three people are arguing about which gun they want to use, which one's cooler and why this is going to work, and they're like, okay, we're going to roll in about a minute, so which gun are we going to use in this? And they'll go, I don't know. And then you have your extra gun sitting there, and you go, well, I just got this one in case because it's going to fit into her pocket, right? Because she's got to pull it out of the pocket of her jacket. And that's actually got just a little bit of detail on it so it'll show up better on camera against her black shirt because she's holding it like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll contrast against, and they're like, huh, I guess that might work better. Well, you should use that one. And then they just shoot. Sometimes they do that. They pick your pick. But that's your creative angle right there. That's as creative as you can get. You know, you can try to pitch your idea to them and try to convince them that it was their idea and that's the only way to get stuff in.
The creativity comes in talking to them, doesn't it?
I believe some people might call it bullshitting. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. That is very good. And that leads into what I would say is the most important aspect of a prop person is your temperament. The key to being a prop person is you have to be able to listen to everyone else's dumb ideas and then have their dumb ideas win over your genius idea and not take it personally and be all bitter like, oh, this is so stupid. I went and got this and that, and then they didn't use it, and I'm so mad. And I did all this work, and nobody cares. Nobody appreciates all my heart on good ideas. And blah, blah, blah. If you get all worked up about yourself, you got to be able to just take and go, man, that didn't work out. They're going to do it their stupid way, whatever. And then you move on. And then you still got to talk to the same people again and not be mad at them.
Okay, when you're on a show, do they supply everything? Do they like have a propped house or something where you
go
and you grab stuff from them? You go to certain places that, like that? Or
yeah.
How does that all work?
They have nothing. You set up accounts around town. There's big prop houses and little prop houses and specialty prop houses. You know, there's guys that are, there's a medical place, A1 Medical or Ellis Medical, and then you go, or Ellis is gone with the, you know, some of these places have guns, more guns than other places. Some are more sci-fi prop houses.
Okay.
There's ISS is a big place that has everything, and HPR, those are the two big ones. And then there's all the little specialty houses. You set up accounts when you start your show, and you open up an account at each place with the accounting department. And then once the scripts start coming out, you kind of know which house has what. You call over there, and you stop by and see what they have, and you pull some items and put them on hold for your show. And then once you've rented, because you don't want to buy too much, because then, you know, you've wasted your money. It's a little cheaper to rent. And then at the end of the show, it goes back to them, and you don't have to store it anymore. It's kind of a win-win. And then once you rented the big ticket items, right, and you want to rent the more expensive stuff, then it comes to the small stuff like, you know, plates and dishware and stuff. You got to talk to the set dresser and see what color you're getting this and that, and, you know, whether they got bedding or little tiny items or small sporting good stuff to get thrown around and specialty pieces. You got to go. You can go buy some of that. And then there's the stuff that has to be made. Like, you know, you've got, like, you know, some sci-fi helmet some kid wears that lights up and the visor comes up, and then you go to their specialty prop making pieces that you do builds for you. And those you have to set up ahead of time and kind of negotiate with the producer and writer and say, what's this going to look like? How's this going to look? Sometimes they'll have a sketch or to your guy and he makes it up and does a little mock-up of what he might do. And then you bring it back and they say yes. And then they want it to do this and the color. So that's a little negotiating back and forth. But yeah, you got to set up your builds, the, you know, special things there's usually a number of different outfits that do that.
So how much time do you have before, like, what's your prep time before you guys start shooting a show or a movie?
Well, to go back, I do mostly multi-camera sitcoms now, which is a multi-camera world. And that's a different schedule than a single-camera world, which is then another, is a little bit different than the feature world. So you've got your three different types of, you know, TV shows. So a feature, when I've done a couple as an assistant, I didn't do many of those because they go out of town a lot. Feature, you get, you know, 6 weeks prep. So you get the script, and for 6 weeks, you're buying and prepping and pulling things for the movie, which takes, you know, how long does a movie take to make now? I don't know. I haven't done them in so long. So you get 6 weeks, and you kind of start making and buying and purchasing and setting up your rentals so that they all time out so that while you're shooting, you know, the SWAT gear is ready on this week, and then the food scene, you set up your food person for the next week. You're scheduling, right, for 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
You usually have a big 40-foot trailer that you've got all your props on, your kit, right? You put your kit on, which has got, like, all your basic stuff and your boxes that every prop guy's got a bunch of crap that they just keep carrying around, right? So on a single camera, you put that on your 40-foot trailer. You got your basic stuff. And then you rent, you know, they're four astronauts. Well, you've got all their walking around stuff on your trailer the whole time, right? So you rent that stuff. You put that on your trailer. And you get a bunch of astronaut-y stuff, and you rent some stuff and buy some things, and you've got it on your trailer. And while your trailer is at the prop house, it's parked in the parking lot. There's usually, like, you know, 30... 40-foot trucks in a prop house parking lot, and you work out of one basic prop house usually. And so you're in the prop house. They give you, like, a little room, a prep room in the prop house, and you do, like, it's kind of like your little office kind of, and you rent from them, and they help you buy stuff, and you fill up your trailer. And then when the movie's going to start, your trailer gets picked up by the transportation department. They drive it out to Arizona or wherever it's going to be, or Lancaster or downtown LA, wherever your location is. And then your truck just starts driving around with all your stuff on it. It goes from location to location. Every couple of days, it'll move, and sometimes it'll go onto a movie studio for a week, and you'll work off a stage. and then it'll go out into the desert for 2 days, and you just kind of follow it around wherever it goes every day. And then every day you arrange to have new props brought to your truck, and some rented props returned back from your truck to the prop house. And so throughout the 2 months to shoot a movie, let's say, your truck, once it's filled up at the prop house within the first 4 to 6 weeks, it then leaves the prop house and never goes back until the end of the movie. And during the shooting of the movie, every couple of days, Transpo will send a truck to pick up props wherever you tell them to go, mm-hmm. and bring them to your truck. And then they will, from your truck, take some props and return them to wherever you want them to go. And then you just follow your truck and rent some things. And the prop master is out arranging all that stuff, while the prop assistants live on that truck, never leave the location, and just work in the scene with the actors and the director and the cameras and all that stuff. So the prop master comes and goes more, and the assistants are on set all the time.
So now how many people are in your crew? Like, you have how many assistants? Does that vary from show to show? And is there anybody other than there's you, there's your assistants, is there anybody else in your little group?
Well, it depends. Like, I'm on the sitcoms. When I do sitcoms, I've got one assistant. It's just me and the assistant, which is why I like sitcoms, because we just stay on one stage. My assistant runs, like, the set mostly, and I come in and help with busy scenes and help set stuff up. And then I'll get a third person if it's got, like, a bunch of background one day. So
okay,
that usually the third is a 1 day a week, 2 days a week, depending on the show. You get a multi-camera show, you usually have, or a single camera, like, let me try the ring of my goodness, single camera. Oh, let's say, like, Modern Family, right? It's still, they use a single camera, and they go around on location. I think they might have two on-set prop people full-time, because since you're on location, you still have a truck that you work off of. And so at the end of every day, you take everything from the set and put it on the truck. And then the next morning, you have to pull everything off the truck and put it back out again. And then so you've got to have two people to kind of arrange all that stuff and move from one place to the next. And then the prop master will come in for a big scene and help with food or something. And then on a feature, they got a crew of four, between two assistants on like a super cheap feature. You get like maybe mm-hmm. two assistants, and then you can get up to like five or six. If you're in Pirates of the Caribbean, you got a bazillion people, because then you've got like gun specialists, yeah. armor specialists, like knife specialists. You've got like specialists that come in and kind of work for props, but kind of don't. Special effects kind of works with props. And sometimes if it's a small show, you have the effects guy, you and the effects guy kind of work stuff out. So you're kind of working together, and you can kind of call, recommend your effects guy that you like, or the producer uh-huh. will hire his effects guy that he likes, if he likes a certain person. And the same thing goes for like animal trainers. Like, if there's an animal on the show, for uh-huh. in some worlds, you call and arrange, brings the animal and trains it and does everything. But sometimes uh-huh. the prop master has to arrange the animal trainer and I hire them, but basically I just recommend this person that I've used before. And then they come in and we kind of go over what's supposed to happen. But then once you're on set, the director is the boss of even people you bring in. Like, you can bring mm-hmm. in food stylists. Like, if there's a big food mm-hmm. scene and the actors are eating a bunch of, Thanksgiving, you have a food stylist you bring in. I've got a couple of them. And you hire them to come in and, you say, this is the scene and these are how many people and this is what they're going to eat. And food stylist comes in, and sometimes they use the prop room to do their prepping, and so they have like their own setup and they do stuff. And so they're kind of working for props, but if the producer has a person they want, they use them and you lose. But then once you're on set, the director or the actors going to say to the food stylist, I don't like the way that looks. I don't want to eat that. I'm allergic to this, So
that's a whole nother thing, isn't it?
Whole nother thing.
Okay. So you said that you have assistants, and the assistants will go around and pretty much do everything. So now what are you doing when the assistant is doing stuff?
They're doing stuff, golfing, watching movies.
Yeah.
I'm stealing from the company. That's what I'm doing. Taking my petty cash and I'm buying stuff for my kids. Schmoozing with my other prop masters, plotting on how to steal from the man. Because the man's keeping us down, so we got to steal from him. That's the prop master to do.
So while they're like just fixing things on the set and everything.
Well, let's do a four camera scenario.
Okay.
A four camera scenario. Okay. you know, let's say it shoots on Friday in front of a big audience, right? Let's say, you know, let's say like 2.5 men. So in front of the audience on Friday, they show. And so on Monday, we get the script. And then we usually, you know, that comes out on Monday. And everyone, we have a production meeting. Everyone talks about, okay, this week we can do this. She's going to go there. They're going to go this. They're going to go this. You got to go putt putt golfing. And then they're going to be at a Chuck E. Cheese. And then there'll be a strip club. And then they're going to, you know, this is going to happen. And so we talk about what the scenarios are going to be. And so then right after that meeting, they go to the stage and the actors kind of rehearse in the sets with no, not really many props. So what I do is pre-meeting, I kind of get some kind of rehearsal props, which is just something to take the place so people can walk around and do stuff, right?
Okay.
So I'll have brought stuff in, usually shopped over the weekend on my own just to have it. And then on Monday, the assistant will be there moving some stuff around and talking to the actors and director about what types of stuff they might want. Now I'm out buying stuff and renting things. And then Tuesday comes along and I've brought some things and I'm going, okay, I got this and this, and do you want to do this? And, you know, an actor will say, no, I want to do this and this, so can you get me something else? And so it changes every day. So the assistant's working on the rehearsal. It's kind of like more of a theater thing, right? They're rehearsing it over and over and over and over. And as they go, they change their minds and want different things. So they're calling me saying, don't do this, stop getting that stuff. He doesn't like that. We're going to do this. And then every day the script changes. So the script changes come out, and then every day you got to kind of arrange more stuff and get rid of stuff that you already got. So it's just kind of plotting for the ultimate shoot on Friday. And then Thursday, they usually do a pre-shoot. So I'm on stage for that. While the assistant's on stage, I'm setting up the next scene. So what I'll do is like this, I'll know what the show is because I'll watch all the rehearsals and talk to my assistant. And then when we start shooting on like a Thursday, it'll be like a pre-shoot. And I'll be ahead, kind of setting up ahead of time or cleaning up afterwards or helping with a busy scene. And then, like, you know, maybe there's like a, they've got an ice cream sundae bar later in the day. I'll be kind of prepping that behind the scenes and getting things set up and, you know, arranging while the assistant is actually right there with the camera, resetting the props and making sure the actors are doing things. So, and then Friday comes along and then we just make sure you've got everything set up. So that the assistant's like right there with the camera and the actors, making sure they've got their stuff. And I'm making sure that the next scene, everything is ready to go. So there's that kind of stuff to do. It's not like I'm not doing anything. I know what you're saying. Lazy drunk, sitting in the back room.
No.
Which sometimes, I'm not going to lie to you, sometimes that happens.
We just have to let the listeners know what exactly your job is. So maybe that's what they want to do, you know? It's just, you know, you're just like, explaining your position.
You got the, everyone's who's like the head of their department, right? You're like the more manager person now. So you don't actually like, you're not all sweaty at the end of every day and, you know, covered in filth like you used to be as an assistant, which is what you got to do. I did that long enough. And, it's unpleasant, but it's what you got to do.
So, Jim, how did you get started in the business?
I came out from Michigan to write. Right. So I came out to be a writer. So I was a PA for 2 years, I think. I was a PA because I didn't know anything about the business. I had nobody who knew the business. I didn't know anyone in town or whatever. So I was a PA for a while and I thought, oh, what's going on? Who's the boss of who? I had no idea. And that was the key. I was on a non-union show. So I'm a PA and I'm just kind of, you know, shooting the breeze with the producers and on the stage. I didn't know who did what. I didn't know what a key grip was for like 4 years. But even though I was in the business, I didn't quite get it because I wasn't on stage often enough. And then they needed a driver for a couple of weeks. So I drove a stake bed for a while. And then I was a grip for a couple of days. And then they looked at me like I was an idiot. My hammer was too small. This is not any indication of the size of my hammer. I'm just saying, apparently I came in with a small hammer and the grips all laughed at me. So it's not a grip anymore. And then the prop master was kind of a pain in the ass. And so his assistant quit to go do anything else because she was tired of him. So I'd been on stage. He's like, you want me to do props? And I'm like, I'll do that. That seems easy. So then I worked for him for like 4 or 5 years. And then I became my own prop master after that. After, you know, I was on a show with him and he did not. The main actor of the show didn't get along with him as well, you know, like him that much. And so then the next year, the show came back and the actor asked the producer, said, "Hey, can you make Jim the Plot Master?" And I didn't know anything about this. And so I'm on location, like we're in Arizona. I'm working for the Plot Master. And I get the phone call going, "Hi, Jim. Let's just call him Tommy." Tommy says, "I was wondering if maybe you'd be Prop Master. How does that work out for you?" I'm like, "Oh, well, I don't know. Probably got to do that." So then I had to tell the Prop Master that I was taking his job from the other show we were going back to. And it worked out fine. He's a good guy. He's a good friend of mine to this very day. So, and he taught me everything I know.
Can you tell us what the show was, your first one that you were the Prop Master on?
First Prop Master I was on, it was the Jeff Foxworthy Show.
Ah, fun. So you told us that there's an assistant, there's you. Is that it, basically? Or is there anybody else in any other jobs that you've done with sitcoms that would be part of your crew?
Well, there's a number of different people. Different people do things differently. Some Prop Masters never want to be on stage. They don't want to be on set. They don't want to talk to any of the actors. They hate everybody. There are some guys like that. As they have tried to get as many, they get a couple extra assistants, and they sometimes get a shopper. You can buy a non-union shopper, PA kind of, it's kind of a dicey gray area, is to have a shopper. It's usually their union, but sometimes people get somebody who's not union to do that job. So if you're not union and you're trying to schmooze up to a Prop Master and get a job, maybe you see if they need a shopper, and it can be run in as a PA on the side. And the shopper basically does what that shops. You know, if it's a pretty simple, we need to get, you know, there's a toga party and everyone's dressed up in sheets. I need you to go get 25 like white sheets, basic sheets, and I want you to get, you know, a bunch of those red solo cups. You know, if you tell your shopper, we're having a college dorm party. Get the shot, you know, get shot glasses, get red cups, get some toga stuffs, get some, you know, it's a Mardi Gras thing, get a bunch of Mardi Gras, go shop, you know, see ya. And they come back at the end of the day. So the shopper usually on a big show, they can work a couple of days a week, or sometimes they work more than that. So there's that person. There's sometimes there's an on-set dresser. A person works with the set dresser, dresses the set, right? Puts all the furniture in, hangs the photos, makes it look all beautiful, right? She's fancy and she knows how to decorate, blah, blah, blah. Prop masters are dullards that just hand out, you know, ugly stuff. And then the set dressers come and go, "Oh, did you buy that? We can't have that picture. They live in, you know, they're
no sense of style, Jim."
Oh, they, you know what? I let them believe that. They seem to be excited about themselves. So I don't want to burst their bubble. But yeah, so if you get the wrong thing, they get a bunch, they're all fancy. Well, the on set dresser basically works for the set dresser. And his or her job is to move all the furniture for the camera and, you know, make sure everything that the set dresser's put in has been pushed around for the actors and the cameras. And carpets are rolled up and tables are kind of smudged a little bit for this shot. And then the chairs move for this shot. And we move the clock in the back for this shot. So they're moving a bunch of furniture around. They mark it, make sure when they do the scene, everything is set right and then set back. So that person, when they say rolling, the rule is when they start rolling camera on the show, on the whatever scene it is, the rule is that person becomes my employee. On set dressers are supposed to listen to me as the prop master. Once they roll camera, I'm supposed to be in charge of that set. So if they start moving stuff, he's supposed to let me know something. It never works that way. Never. That dresser is hired by the set decorator. I don't hire him. He's not my, you know, he's not on my Rolodex. I can't hire him normally. So the set dresser has hired this guy. Well, the next time there's a movie that comes up, who is he hoping likes him? Me? He doesn't care about me. The on-set dresser wants the set decorator to like him, right? Because she's going to hire him again next show. So you ask him to do stuff and say, "Hey, man, can you do this and not do this? And because I wanted this and this." He's like, yeah. You know what? Carol wanted to really see that. Like, yeah, but we're shooting the scene. It's in the way. Carol really wants it. Like, screw you, on set dresser. But all right, it's not quite that acrimony. But it is kind of like it's a little bit of a thing. Normally, they're good people, and they get along with the on-set prop assistant. But there's a little bit of that there.
Now, who do you report to? Is it, like, different for different things you report to different people, or are you your own boss? How does that work out?
I am. This is why I like the multi-camera world, because I am the boss of me. I am my own little satellite world in this multi-camera world. I kind of report to the director, the actors, and the showrunner, right? We just kind of negotiate stuff out. If you're on a single camera thing, the production designer, who is the head of the art department, and has this, you know, picks out color swatches and fabric choices and, you know, setting all that crazy stuff. Like, the production designer kind of can hire a prop master and is more to say about, you know, each graphic is this and these menus got to look like that and I want that and that. And you do a lot more running around for in features and single camera. The production designer has got a lot more say over you getting hired and what you do. But in my world of multi-camera, the line producer of a show hires me. So my goal in the first 10 years of my job was to meet and schmooze up as many line producers as I could, because the next job I would call a line producer, say, hey, what show do you got coming up? And if they liked me and things worked out, then they would hire me. And then I would say hi to the old production designer and say, hey, Martin, how you doing, buddy? And he's like, oh, hey, Jim, how's it going? I go, hey, I had a thought about the menus. I'm like, I got it taken care of. Thanks, Martin. See you later. And that would be the end of my discussions with Martin, the production designer. Okay. He's a safe product. Okay. There's nobody named Martin.
So now, since you are your own boss and everything, I know that I'm just getting really specific with you. I know that you said that you kind of have to listen to everybody's idea, but do you actually have like a say on certain things, or are you still having to deal with all the people with what they want as far as like the design and the certain props that you're doing? I know you said you kind of listen to them, but then you kind of sort of make your way into saying, well, kind of this is what I thought.
You know what? It depends on the dynamic of the show. On some shows, there's like a showrunner or a director who is a psychopath and they just hate everything and they want exactly what they want. And you're like, all right, I'm just going to get whatever this guy says and that's going to be the end of it. And you just kind of suffer through those shows. And then there's some shows where, you know, that you get along with the showrunner or an actor or something and you kind of pitch your ideas and you bring in different props, or you can even like, if a writer says, you know, has got some, you know, really, really bad idea where they're like, you know, let's make this, they're going to make a head. It's going to be out of cheese. We're going to make it out of cheese. And then they're going to eat his face. They're going to pull his nose off and they're going to start eating his, and then they're going to pull the top of the skull open and they're going to eat like brain cheese out of the top of this cheese thing. And you're like, okay, here's the story. And then you got to go, all right, here's the deal. How about, you know, instead of that, you know, we make a head that looks like it's made out of cheese and all he does is take the ear off, because I can make an ear come off and he can eat that. And then we just don't do the other stuff because it's just going to goo up. And, you know, if you can plead your case reasonably to somebody, if you're doing it not because you're a lazy piece of crap, which some guys are, and they just don't want to do work. Mm-hmm. If you do it because you think it's a good idea for the scene and you can convince the writer or actor how this is going to work better for them, then they're going to go with you and go, oh, okay, that seems like a good idea. But if you're doing it because you're like, oh, that's really hard, I don't want to do it, can we just not do that and I'll just put some cheese on a plate? Then they're going to go, no, that's not the joke, you idiot. Well, how about a lot of cheese on a plate? Like, no. But yeah, you can. There are reasonable people to deal with, and then there are unreasonable people, and you figure them out. And the reasonable people are fun to work with, and they appreciate the stuff you do. And you can pitch ideas, and you can pitch jokes and make fun stuff too. So depends on your show.
Cool.
Yeah.
Now, for your props, I know you said you go to prop houses and you get stuff.
Right.
Is there any time where you keep some of the stuff, or you have to bring everything back?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a dirty little secret that the prop kit, your kit is like, you know, you've got blankets and you've got dishes and you've got watches and you've got sunglasses and you've got, you know, you got a little bit of everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you first become a prop person, you get all your little kits set up, and then every show, they don't want stuff, the cool things and blah, blah, blah. But if you bought, you know, plates and, you know, some glassware and some silverware and stuff, and, you know, placemats for a scene, they're like, I don't know, we don't have room to store everything. I don't, you know, you want to keep it? They're like, yes, I do. 7 years of collecting crap from every show you've ever been on. You're like, oh my God, what am I doing with all this crap? And then you start giving it all away. And then you kind of keep a, there's a homeostasis. There's a, you know, there's a little bit of a point where you kind of get to a point where you've got all your watches you like, and then you have to buy some watches for the show all of a sudden. And then at the end of the show, you keep the watches that are a little bit better than yours, and then you return your craftier watches to the show, and you cycle out your stuff. So it kind of, you know, you feel like there are, believe me, there are prop masters who outright steal. They buy things, and they fake receipts, and they just keep stuff. I mean, there's legends. There's a guy who, all right, here's the story. I'm not going to say the show or the guy, but people in the business know this guy. Classic scam artist. He was on a show where they had to rent a, let's call it an ambulance. He had to rent this vehicle every week for this big show, right? So he used the show money to rent this thing, and he overpaid the guy he was renting it from. But what he was doing was he was taking that show money and applying it to the purchase of the vehicle. He was basically paying down the cost of the vehicle. At the end of the first year, he had ambulance. Then the next year, he rented that same ambulance to the show. So every ambulance rental check came to him. So all of a sudden, he used the show's money to buy the thing. And then he, you know, got the show to continue paying him for this ambulance that he got the show to buy. They didn't even buy. That's classic scam prop master thing. This is why producers are always leery of a prop master and check the budget and everything, because there's guys like that out there.
Wow.
He got caught and fired and everything, but he still works like crazy all the time.
See, that's just wrong.
It is wrong. It makes it hard for like regular person who doesn't steal, you know, just swaps out a couple of watches now and again and, you know, keeps plates like me. I mean, I'll admit to that. But, you know, you go to a new job and the producer just got screwed by some idiot prop master. And he's like, so I'm going to see all your receipts and I want your fingerprint on everything. And I want your retina scan. And I'm going to do a colonoscopy on you right before we go. And you're like, oh, dude.
Okay, so I guess let's talk about the cast. Do you interact with them often, or how is the relationship between you and the cast members?
Oh, the cast members. Oh, you know, it depends on each show. Sometimes the cast members are very, you know, there are two types of cast members if you think about props.
Okay.
There are people who love props and they want to talk to you and they like things. They bring stuff in and they have ideas and they, you know, they want to use a prop in the scene.
Okay.
And I would say more often though, more actors hate props and they don't want to carry anything. They don't want to have things in their hands too much. They don't want to be doing stuff, you know? And so, you know, the script says, you know, she's knitting this thing and she pulls it out and then she puts it on a pillow and she's doing these crafts. And so she glues stuff together and she's building this scrapbook and she's scrapbooking here and she's knitting it. And she goes, you know what? I don't want to do any of that crap. And you're like, well, that's kind of the thing you got to do. So I got all this stuff, scrapbook stuff and knitting things. I started some knitting. I had somebody start it. So you don't have to knit very much. It's already almost done. You just kind of fake it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And they just hold it and then they put it down. And you're like, oh my God, that's terrible. So, and then some people are maniac and they go in the script. It says, she's sitting there reading the newspaper. And then she looks up in the paper and says, well, are you kidding me? I did that in Iowa once, and I'll never forget the rash I got, blah, blah, blah. They say their joke, they're done, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, sometimes that actress goes, you know, instead of a paper, how about this? How about, I'm playing Jenga, okay? I'm playing Jenga with myself, because I'm crazy for Jenga. And then what I'm also doing is I'm also super gluing some things to a thing, and you're like, oh my, what? It says newspaper. I got the newspaper. Yeah, but we do the Jenga thing instead, and then I want to do this, and by the... I'm also making a smoothie. So I'm like, you're making a smoothie. Nobody says you're making a smoothie. So So there's like two types of people. But as far as like people, as far as like being, you know, just talking to them about their lives and everything, some people like to come in and chat a lot. Some people come in and they don't want to talk to you and they don't want you to talk to them and they don't want you to look at them and they want you to hand them the props right when they need them. And then as soon as they're done, they drop them on the floor and they walk away from you. Sometimes those actors' names are Rob Schneider. All right. So that asshole, I'll tell you right now. Oh my God.
Oh, Jim.
So we're not best friends, but mostly like the, you know, the big actors who are really rich and, you know, do a lot of stuff and they've been there a long time. They're usually cool by now because they've done it long enough and they get it. And they know that you're just a working guy trying to, you know, do a good job and they're cool with that. And so they're friendly and nice to you, but you don't talk to them much because they talk to the director about, you know, what their favorite restaurant in Paris is. And, did you go to that opening, you know, in Telluride? Cause that was crazy. And, you know, there's this, you know, it's all sorts of, they're in a whole different financial level. So you don't talk to them much, but the medium actors, the younger ones that are just kind of starting out, you can talk to them about regular stuff. Cause they just went to IKEA last weekend with their girlfriend, just like you did.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then so they'll end up talking to you for a little while about normal stuff. And, you know, some people that I would, I'm kind of friendly with some actors that you still know and stay in touch with on Facebook, and they're cool people. And they're, you're like, oh, if you make this like a similar amount of money, you kind of have more in common and you kind of talk about the same things like public school and your kids and stuff. And,
this is true.
And if somebody makes a lot of money, you can't really talk to them about very much because they're crazy people. They're like, man, I didn't know which Tesla to buy. What about you? I'm like, oh, I didn't know whether to get like a 2010 or a 2011 Subaru. So I know how you feel, you know, like, whatever.
Exactly.
You can't chat with them much. But yeah, there are definitely some morons. The psychos are the best though. Cause after you're done working on the psycho show, you got loads of stories. So that's pretty fun.
Do you have any crazy stories?
Any good stories?
Yeah.
Well, let's see. Psycho stories or like me screwing up some. Val Kilmer is also a pretty terrible human being.
Oh.
He's pretty bad. I don't know if you've seen him lately. He's kind of big.
No.
And that's because his soul is so infected with evil that he has expanded. That's my theory on him. You know, we haven't seen him in many things lately because everyone knows he's terrible. I did Tombstone. And I did Salt and Sea, two features with him, and he was a horrible man both times.
Wow.
He had, here's my Tombstone. I got a couple of Tombstone stories. I'll tell you, like, two really fast prop ones.
Okay.
His character smoked in Tombstone. Yeah. He was awesome in that, right?
Yeah.
Did you see Tombstone?
Yeah.
He was very good in that. Mm-hmm. Horrible human being, though. He had to smoke certain cigarettes. So we had to roll cigarettes for him because they were old fashioned, right?
Right.
But he also smoked, so as the on-set person, I had to have three different brands of cigarettes with me at all times because he would decide which brand he was smoking that day. And this is off camera. This isn't even a prop. Off camera, I had to give him his cigarettes and a lighter. I mean, every cigarette, I gave him another lighter. And one time he goes, he didn't know my name, a guy, you know, Marlboro Light. I'm like, okay. So I open a pack, and I hand him a cigarette. And he looks at the cigarette and he holds it up to my ear. And he rolls it in his fingers and he goes, hey, does that sound fresh to you? I'm like, sound fresh? I go,
wow.
I go, just open the pack right here. I just pulled it out. And he goes, well, that's a bad pack. He throws it on the ground. He goes, get me another pack. I'm like, oh my God, this isn't even a prop for the scene. It was just him being a dick.
Ugh.
He had another prop was in the scene and he was drinking from a flask by the riverside, you know, poignant, you know, evening shot where he's just contemplating life or whatever it is. And we have a bunch of flasks, but he decides he wants to bring his own flask because some days he would bring liquor in his flask and just get hammered while he's doing his scene. And some days he wouldn't, but that was his choice. So he brought his own flask. That's why he wanted to do it. So he goes to the riverside. We do a couple of takes and he decides at the end of one take, takes a swig, stands for a second, heaves it into the river. That was his acting choice, right?
Oh no.
And so they go, cut. They go, so you guys got another flask? I'm like, no, that was his stupid flask that we don't have any like it. We have triples of everything, but we don't have another one like that one. That was his.
Oh.
Well, can you go into the river and get it? I'm like, no, it's a huge river. I'm going in the river looking for a flask. They go, okay, we're done. Cut. Go home, everybody. That was it. End of scene. Just because he wanted to be a dick. And he was trying to get us to go out and get his flask for him.
Oh,
I'm like, I'm not going in the river.
Ugh. You're like, no, won't be doing that today.
No.
What would you suggest to someone who's just starting out in the business and they want to be in the props department and be a prop master?
I would say they start working on non-union shows, try to find some non-union stuff around town, student films or whatever, doing some props so that you can start going. You need a reason to go to the prop house and figure out which prop houses have what and how they're laid out and what they have. And if you just kind of go walk around, you can, like a regular like student film person does. But you're never going to know what you need and where to go until you work on some shows and you have to go to the prop house to get something. You have to set up an account there and figure out how they're laid out. So, you know, if you're a PA on a non-union thing, you can then help out the prop master if you, you know, go visit their room and see if they need help and it's non-union and, you know, they can, if you could pick something up for them or go to the prop house for them or get along with them. And, I would do that. Yeah, do some non-union stuff in the prop world. And then you'll, by necessity, start learning the difference between what you need to rent and what you need to buy. And, you know, what else? What's another good trick? You know, if you know, to have a parent that's a prop master, apparently half the guys in town are do that way.
That's, you know, always a
so
good
work
way,
on
yes.
that. Talk to your parents about, yeah, I didn't have that route, but that seems to happen a lot. Let's see, what other prop mastery skills do you need? There's some people who do some fabrication. There's like one company that she's an artist, and she just paints kids' pictures and, you know, fake Rembrandts for those or whatever it is.
Oh.
And she's an artist, but prop masters end up hiring her and her people to make certain art that's cleared because, you know, you can't use.
Right.
You can't use something that somebody else painted without getting their permission. So you have somebody do a fake version and then it's all yours to put in a show. So if you have like a certain skill and you run into some prop masters, you could, you know, be an independent, you know, builder of something. There's graphics people that do graphics for prop guys and they're not in the union or anything. They're just graphics guys. And there's one guy I know that, you know, he's into electronics and, you know, making things light up and turn on and switches. And so if I needed a globe that spun and shot stars onto the ceiling, if you get like a prop maker, if you can make certain things,
okay,
then you can build a relationship with a prop master that way by, you know, just doing one-off jobs for, you know, I'll do this for $300 and I'll make that for $500 or, you know, I can do this in a day. So then you become friendly with that person and then you're more likely to be taken on to some other job if you show the inclination.
Okay.
My suggestion is to fail at what you really want to do and then end up in props. I think that's the way to go, you know? So when your band doesn't make it, get into props. When your musical theater degree doesn't work out for you, get into props. When you want to be a writer and a fail, get into props. So that's half the crew really in every show. It's like they came out to direct, act, write, sing, whatever, be in a band. And none of it worked out, so they ended up on the crew of a TV show.
Okay, so I'll give you a call sometime, Jim, and say, hey. So when you see PAs, and you're talking about how, like, you can grab a PA to help you do stuff, and then they could possibly move up, what do you want to see from them? Like, what?
You know what? They got to be kind of like a handyman. If they can do a lot of different things, okay, and they're efficient at it. Because I've had PAs come say, hey, man, I really want to get into props. And you're like, oh, really? They go, yeah, because one guy said, yeah, you know why I want to get into props? Because I like going to the Hard Rock because I like the cool props that they have, like, you know, on the wall.
I'm like, well, man, okay, well.
You can like looking at stuff on a wall, but what do you, look, he goes, the guy was absolutely worthless. He couldn't set up a folding table. I mean, it was terrible. You know,
wow.
You got to be able to, like, do stuff you've never done before,
awesome.
Right?
That's great. So they have to be a craftsperson. They have to be able to work with their hands.
Usually.
So lastly, Jim, if you were the king of Hollywood, what would you do differently?
Oh, no, what would I do? Well, I would, I don't know what I would do. You know, I would go quit my job and be king of Hollywood. I wouldn't have to be a prop master anymore. Bingo. I mean, if I'm king of Hollywood, I don't have to do props, right?
Right. That.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Good.
I'm not one of those people that dreamed of being a prop master my whole life. I mean, I kind of fell into it and I was pretty good at it and worked out okay. But, yeah, you know, like King of Hollywood, I'd write my own show and then I'd hire a prop master to prop it. That's what I'd do.
Good answer.
Yeah.
Oh, Well, Jim, you have been very entertaining.
Well,
I've enjoyed our conversation.
Glad. All right. I said, hey, you can see more. Oh, you should go to my website, jimfalkenstein.com.
Okay.
It's got all my personal, it's got my fan photos, but it's got I got a prop master page on there. And then I got videos of my mistakes of the week I would do. I got a couple of shows when they didn't care. I do like a little 1 minute video of prop mistakes of the week. And I explain the thing that they asked me to do and how I screwed it up and what changed. So you should look, there are a bunch of little, I got like a dozen 1 minute videos. And I got a crew, what did I call that? I shot some video of my interview, the head of a department.
Uh-huh.
And then I then interview his assistant to get the real story on what they do.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got a prop master one.
Awesome. That sounds like fun to check out.
Yeah, it's pretty fun to check out.
Jim, thank you. Thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. And I'm sure our listeners are going to have a ball listening to your interview.
Fantastic. I'm sure. How many millions of viewers do you have, or listeners? Hundreds of millions? Is it huge?
We had, for last week's show, we had 500 listeners.
Woo-hoo! Kill it.
Thank you.
All right, Tam. I'll talk to you later.
Okay. Bye. And that's it for Crew Call. Thanks again to Jim Falkenstein for his very enthusiastic discussion about props. Tune in next time for cinematographer Joaquin Cedillo. If you'd like to support Crew Call, remember to click the Amazon link on the TAPA website before you go shopping. It doesn't cost you anything, and Amazon gives us a little kickback. Everyone wins.